Hi, this is Ed Fitzpatrick. If you enjoy local politics as much as I do, be sure to join our friends at Rhode Island PBS for the show A Lively Experiment. Hosted by Jim Hummel, the weekly series features journalists, pundits, and politicians debating the stories and issues that matter most to us Rhode Islanders. Tune in to A Lively Experiment and be part of the conversation. Fridays at 7 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS and wherever you get your podcasts. From the Boston Globe, this is Rhode Island Report. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. Welcome back to the podcast where we bring you big conversations from our very small state. It's now been nearly 3 months since the Rhode Island Department of Transportation shut down the westbound side of the Washington Bridge, and it doesn't look like it's reopening anytime soon. Here to give us the latest on this debacle, our own Steph Machado and Jim Hummel, host of A Lively Experiment on Rhode Island PBS. Welcome, Steph and Jim.
Hi, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
So the Washington Bridge has been closed since December 11th now, and after the now famous young engineer spotted a problem, it turned out the bridge was in danger of falling down. So Steph, bring us up to date. When might this bridge reopen?
Well, I can tell you when it's not going to reopen, which is next week at the three-month mark, which was the original time frame we were given when the bridge closed on December 11th. There have obviously been additional problems with the bridge identified, and the three-month window is out the door. What we're waiting on now is whether or not the bridge needs to be demolished and completely replaced, or if perhaps it can be partially replaced, or if it can be repaired. And each of those potential options will have a different time frame attached to it. Obviously, presumably an entirely brand new bridge will be the longest. That could take years to build. And so the time frame that we have been given is late February to early March this decision would be made, and it is March the 4th.
Yes,
so
yes.
Any day now, we're expecting a decision.
So we recently saw a draft report by VN Engineers. What did that conclude, Steph?
So it found that repairing the westbound bridge, the options were, quote, limited and complex and would not completely resolve the problems with the bridge. It basically said this was a very unique structure. It got into a lot of detail about these tie-down rods that were broken. And something that I just wrote down this quote because I reread the report last night, and it said, the bridge may not present adequate structural distress prior to failure for routine inspection to detect. They're saying the bridge could fail and it would not be caught in a routine inspection.
Oh,
it also said that the chances of collapse were low. I mean, they're not trying to alarm people, but they're saying that these rods, even if they were repaired, may fail in a manner that would not be caught in a routine inspection.
But the bottom line is it's years, not months. It will not be months. So it's going to be a year, 2 years, 3 years. And I think most people know that. I mean, we were expecting March. Hey, maybe it'll be fixed and we'll be able to go back to normal.
So Jim, you live in Barrington. How's the bridge traffic?
Well, fortunately, I have flexibility of schedule. The person who does not have flexibility is my wife, who works at Rhode Island Hospital. She goes in 5 days a week. She has to be at the hospital, and she goes in at the height of rush hour both ways. So what used to be a 15 to 18 minute ride, occasionally if there was an accident, it might be more, is now a 45 to 50 minute ride each way. So she, you know, at the end of a long day, all you want to do is get home. You're sitting in the traffic again. So all of, you know, when I thought about this, Ed, with the governor kind of stepped at it and he stepped back on it now. The governor lives in Cumberland. Peter Alviti lives in Coventry, and while they can be empathetic, unless you sit in that traffic every day, 5 days a week, as tens of thousands of people do, I don't think you understand the gravity of the aggravation.
Yeah, we went over it over the weekend, and it was backed up all the way to the Massachusetts line.
On the weekend.
It's like you never really know what kind of day you're going to get, because I've been stuck on it on the weekend sometimes, and then sometimes it's totally fine on the weekend. I was on you called me the other day, and
yeah, you're on the bridge.
I was on assignment in East Providence on Thursday afternoon, and panicked because I got out of this interview and I said, oh my gosh, it's 4:30. I'm on the wrong side of the bridge, the right side being the Providence side of the bridge. And Ed called me and he's hearing all this honking and he's like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm fighting for my life.
But here's
he's going to have to call 911
to get to
1:30.
Yeah, it took 45 minutes to go 4 miles, which is normally about a 7 or 8 minute drive. And yes, during rush hour, it's 10 to 15, but it's never 45. I commuted over the Washington Bridge every day for 8 years. I'm pretty familiar with the traffic, you know, when it's bad, when it's not. And it's just it really is eating into people's days, and it's a big inconvenience.
But here's the other intangible is you leave more time that potentially is wasted. So I go to Lively Experiment on Friday mornings, and it used to be a 18 to 20-minute ride. I leave a full 40 to 45 minutes now because you never know. I've got to be there at a certain time. So a lot of times I'll get there 30 minutes, but it's 10 to 15 minutes that I'd rather be spending at home or sleeping or doing something else rather than getting there early and sitting in the parking lot.
So Jim, is Steph points out, state officials said that they would announce whether the bridge can be repaired or will need to be replaced by late February or early March. And I'm no engineer, but I believe it's early March. So what do you expect the decision to be, and what will that mean for Rhode Island's motorists?
Well, so either way, I think it's going to be a significant rebuild, if not a total rebuild. And I just think they need to weigh the options. I think they probably knew that a month ago once they really started getting in there. And I'll take them at their word that why in July did we not see it? And now, whatever. We're at the point now that they're looking at that damage. The question is any of that bridge salvageable? The whole reconfiguring of the lanes now, is that going to work? People just want to be able to say, I want a bridge that I can count on to go over. And that's without accidents. What I don't get is people are going relatively slower now, and you still see, my wife said she was coming home one day, a car had flipped over. How do you go fast enough in that traffic to flip your car? Place. And if a car flips, good luck.
That's going to be gridlock. Yeah. What would tearing down that bridge mean for Rhode Island's economy and for all the businesses in that area?
I think this is a big concern, and the economy might be a more complicated question, but for individual businesses, if this is going to be a long-term, multi-year closure, that is very concerning. And I think it's case by case, depending on if the business, you know, who is the clientele at this business? If there's a yoga studio in East Providence and most of their clients are coming from Providence, are those people going to go find a new yoga studio that doesn't require them to cross the bridge? Will that business ever recover? Just as an example, you know, I live on the Providence side of the bridge, but I go to East Providence for my doctor's office is there, my mechanic is there, my pharmacy, I go to stores and restaurants. And now I'm making this calculation as a consumer. Do I have time? Do I have an hour to do that errand? Or am I going to find, you know, a new mechanic in Providence, right? So I think individual businesses, depending on who their customers are and where they come from, are going to be harmed if this is a tear-down, rebuild, multi-year event. We know they've already been harmed by the past few months, and that's a reason why people just want answers about what the decision's going to be either way so they know how long it will last. So
I also think, though, there are people in the West Bay who send their kids to Bayview, mm-hmm. and people in the East Bay sending their kids to Moses Brown who are rethinking that. In terms of, am I going to continue to send my kids to a private school that I need to get them there every day? That may be a recalculation.
That's interesting.
Providence Country Day and all those schools. So, Jim, what does this bridge crisis mean for Governor McKee? How do you think he's handled this crisis?
Well, I mean, up until now, I think it's been pretty disastrous. I think the messaging has been bad. It's been, you know, we ought to be grateful that lives, you know, weren't lost because the bridge crumbled. I mean, that's a great communication strategy, right? So, I also think, you know, we originally thought 3-4 months, then we'll put it in the rearview mirror. Well, now, if it's a couple of years, it puts it right into the middle of the election season in 2026, which seems so far away, I'm sure. Now, the question is, if they can get by either using part of the old bridge or whether this whole 10-foot wide thing, which I have my doubts about, is going to work with the 3 lanes each way. If the commute times are reasonable and not getting in people's way, we have very short memories in this state. And so who knows where we're going to be 2 years from now? And who knows? Having done that, maybe people just figure, you know, that's part of my life now, and I'm not holding anybody responsible. It's very raw right now. How it's going to be 2 years from now.
Steph, what do you think are the political implications of the Washington Bridge? I mean, what was the reaction, for instance, when Governor McHugh told people the commute time has only increased by like 15 minutes or so?
Yeah, I think that really rubbed people the wrong way. It felt dismissive of the level of disruption the bridge closure has had on people's lives. I mean, we just talked about people who can't work from home, who have to go to the hospital and can't adjust their working hours, really having to spend a great deal of time in the traffic. I've spoken to people who, you know, they leave for work 45 minutes earlier now, but their daycare isn't open 45 minutes earlier. So now they have to find alternative childcare for the morning time. And so to say, oh, it's only 15 minutes, yeah, sometimes it's only 15 minutes, but sometimes it's 45. Like we said, it really depends on the day. And there's traffic on the side road. So I don't know if that's being counted in the 15-minute delay calculation.
That's where you were stuck, right?
But yeah. I mean, I actually feel that the traffic is worse in East Providence trying to get to 195 or to the Henderson Bridge because everyone's trying to get around. And there's also gridlock in Providence. And so that's not necessarily traffic on the bridge, but it's still adding to your commute time. You know, initially when the bridge shut down, I thought it was politically fortuitous that it had happened during Governor McKee's the first year of his 4-year term. Now that we know this is actually going to be a multi-year story, and it could be, I mean, listen, if they reopen a brand new bridge in 2026, that will be great for his reelection campaign. They'll cut the ribbon. But I don't know if you can build a bridge that fast, if a full rebuild is what we're talking about here. And so certainly if the bridge is still closed while the governor is campaigning in 2026, that's going to be a huge political issue for him.
I have a standing offer to the governor. We have a couple of extra rooms now that the kids are gone. He can come. He can bring Willa. He can bring the trooper. He can stay at my house for a week, and he can drive to the state house. Now, he has to drive. If the state trooper wants to ride shotgun, you can put Willa in the back. She can sing songs or do whatever she's going to do. But he's got to experience it 7 days a week from behind the wheel.
We'll have more on our conversation about the Washington Bridge closure after a quick break. When you want to go beyond the headlines, let me recommend Rhode Island PBS Weekly. Rhode Island PBS Weekly is an award-winning news magazine broadcast that gives you the full story, powered by investigative journalism and narrative storytelling. New episodes of Rhode Island PBS Weekly drop Sundays at 7:30 p.m. on Rhode Island PBS. Watch past episodes at ripbs.org/weekly. That's ripbs.org/weekly. Back in December, Steph, DOT Director Peter Alviti said the bridge had passed inspection in July. So he said something catastrophic happened between July and now. But is that conclusion now in doubt?
It is. I don't think it's been debunked, but I definitely think it's safe to say that it is in doubt and that he is no longer making that assertion. He's now saying we need to wait for the investigation and the reports to come and tell us what happened here. I think the first crack in the story was the emails that we obtained through a public records request where the engineer who first flagged the critical failure said the construction work they were doing on the bridge sort of uncovered this problem with the rods, and it was an area of the bridge that was not previously visible. It was sort of uncovered by the construction work, and that perhaps this problem had pre-existed. And so the question remains, did this problem predate the July inspection and it was just missed? We don't know the answer.
Do we ever know the name of the young engineer?
Well, the gentleman whose name was Andrew, who sent the email to the DOT about the critical failure, I have called him. I've emailed him.
Right.
I don't know if he's the young engineer. He has, I want to say, 17 years experience. So he's more of a—
How young is he?
So young is in the eye of the beholder.
Well, for a 70-year-old guy, I'm sure he's like a young guy.
And he's an experienced engineer. So I don't know if he was the supervisor of the young engineer or if he is the young engineer. Right. That remains a bit of a mystery.
Right, trying to find Joe Mollicone, the young engineer.
Andrew, if you're listening, give us a call. So, Jim, the U.S. Department of Justice has ordered the State Department of Transportation to turn over records related to the bridge amid an investigation of potential violations of federal contracting fraud law. So what is DOT looking for, and what could the repercussions be of that investigation?
Well, I think they want to know, we've dedicated tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to this bridge. How has that been used, quite simply?
Steph, last week, House Majority Whip Catherine Kazarian and other East Bay legislators introduced legislation that would mandate monthly reports from DOT about the bridge. What does that tell you?
Well, I liked that a tweet from John Marion at Common Cause. He said, file this under things that shouldn't have to be legislated. Mm. I mean, I think it tells me that these East Bay lawmakers don't feel like they would be able to obtain these monthly reports without passing a law, which is a problem in itself. And I will say they've been having meetings. They've been having regular meetings with the DOT, but it seems as though they want more than that. They want reports. They want them to be public.
But they want also the director to have signed off on them. Mm-hmm. I think that's a key part.
Right. As opposed to a casual.
Oh, I didn't know these were.
As opposed to a Zoom call where they sort of get a more casual report, this would be something more formal.
Right.
Jim, on February 12th, the House and Senate Oversight Committees grilled Peter Obidi and two other witnesses about the bridge for nearly 4 hours. I sat through all 4 hours. What did we learn from that hearing? Will legislators be holding more oversight hearings?
I'm not sure how much we learned. There was a lot of theater. I'm not sure the substance. I did talk to House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale this morning because I said, hey, there was all the sound and fury. What's going on? And he said, nothing is scheduled now, but he was going to ask this week. He wants to have more hearings, but clearly that has to be cleared by the leadership. So he's going to have that discussion.
And speaking of Chippendale, Republicans cite the bridge as an example of why Rhode Island needs an inspector general's office. They've been talking about that for years. Is this the year that actually happens?
Don't hold your breath. The leadership's not committed to that at all.
Steph, what alternative modes of transportation are being considered now? I mean, people could take the buses to lessen the traffic, but isn't RIPTA considering cutting bus routes right now?
They are. And, you know, there was a brief ferry service that they were running from Bristol to Providence, but it wasn't super convenient. You had to drive to the park, take a shuttle to the ferry, take a ferry to Providence, take a shuttle to Kennedy Plaza. So it wasn't being used really as an alternative to driving over the bridge. And yes, you know, there could be routes cut for our only real public transit system, which is RIPTA, at the same time that people are dealing with all of this traffic. We've got the train from, you know, Providence, Pawtucket, Westerly, but we don't have a sort of subway, light rail type of system here. And so RIPTA is it.
But let me ask you this. Is this the time to be thinking of cutting RIPTA services?
It certainly seems to be in conflict with the goal of helping people get around better.
So let's end by answering this question. What's the main question you have about the Washington Bridge right now, Jim?
The main question I have is, it looks like it's going to be a significant rebuild. What are the creative alternatives to get this done as quickly as possible? I mean, it's not just like those. They used to build those things off-site at the Wampanoag Trail and slide them in. You can't do that. But is there technology out there that has been used somewhere else that they can employ here?
Steph?
Yeah, there's a million questions, but the number one is, when will the bridge reopen?
Jim and Steph, thank you for joining us, and good luck on the bridge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Rhode Island Report is a production of the Boston Globe in collaboration with Rhode Island PBS. Today's episode was produced by Megan Hall with help from Scott Hellman. Audio mixing and mastering by Marissa Ewing of Hemlock Creek Productions. Our music is from APM. And if you like the show, do us a favor and text it to a friend. I'm Ed Fitzpatrick. See you next week. Looking to binge watch all your favorite PBS shows? You need Rhode Island PBS Passport, Masterpiece, Antiques Roadshow, Rhode Island PBS Weekly, and many more. Watch them all, anytime, and from any streaming device. Learn more about this member benefit at ripbs.org/passport. That's ripbs.org/passport.